Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I am your co-host, Ms. Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
And this is episode 78 of Party Foul Radio. Thank you guys for tuning in.
It's not 77.
No, last week was 77, girl.
All right, 78.
Yeah. Wait, hold on.
Did you have to double check?
Yes! No. I knew it was 78, but I was double checking. So, it was a crazy busy weekend for me, you guys. And, Pearl, what did you do over the weekend?
I had...
Talk up, bitch.
So, I actually got sick last week. I got this fever thing that's been going around.
Oh my god.
And I got sick on Wednesday. I took the rest of the week off of work. Like, that's how sick I was.
Wow. Okay.
And I was okay enough to do the show I had on Saturday for brunch over at the Lookout. And then after that, I just stayed in bed all weekend.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was terrible. Like, I still have some of a cough now, but I'm completely...
If this bitch gets me sick, I'm gonna...
I'm a live, girl. I'm a live.
She's gonna die. More like it. She's gonna die. So.
But yeah, no, so I'm so happy that, like, I'm done with that. But it was awful. Like, it was like a fever almost, like, right off the bat. It started off, like, with just, like, my throat. It felt like my throat was closing up. Like, it was almost difficult for me to breathe.
Okay.
Wednesday night, I was kind of scared to go to sleep. Because I just was scared that I wasn't going to be able to breathe.
Oh my god, yeah. Y'all, when you can't breathe, that is no fun, girl. No, a number of years ago, I got pneumonia.
You could die.
You really can. And the doctors told me that I was like, because I'm so stubborn, I was like laying here and it got so bad that I had to lay down. I couldn't stand up because what happens when you catch pneumonia is your lungs begin to fill with fluids. And when I would lay down, the fluid would sort of like distribute a little bit, like, you know, because you're...
Plan out.
Yeah. And I would be able to breathe, but it would still be really shallow. But if I stood up, all the fluid would go to the bottom and I could barely breathe at all. Like to get from my bed to the bathroom, which is like 15 feet max, I nearly passed out. Like, shit. Legit, seriously. And ultimately, my drag aunt, Athena Van Doren, and Megan Pixel came over and got me and took me to, the ER. Yes.
That had to be a while ago.
It was, like, in 2010. They legit almost had to carry me to the car and lay the seat down because I could, you know what I mean? It was horrible. And I ended up being in the hospital for 4 days for that shit. But, the point being that before it got to that bad, I know what it was like to, like, be like, okay, I'm afraid I'm gonna, like, not be able to breathe when I'm sleeping, or...
Right, that's exactly what I felt like. Luckily, my partner took care of me. He has the days off most of the time, so I was lucky. And now my best friend is sick, and she just, it just started for her yesterday, so she sent me a few audio messages today, and she just...
Poor thing.
Sounds terrible.
Is that V?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, V. Oh, I thought she was going out of town.
She was supposed to, but her surgery date got moved.
Oh, okay. What kind of surgery is she getting?
A Brazilian butt lift.
A Brazilian butt lift?
Yep.
Is that where they rip all the hair off your cooch and then lift your butt?
What?
Isn't that what a Brazilian is, when they rip the hair off your cooch?
That's a Brazilian wax, girl.
Oh, whatever, girl. They're like, we're gonna snatch this hair off your cooch so hard it's gonna lift your ass, bitch.
No, bitch. You're so stupid. A Brazilian butt lift is when you're such a mess. They take the fat out of unwanted areas of your body and they put it into your ass and your hips.
Okay.
Which is what I want eventually, but I just don't have the money for it. Like, it's...
Right.
It's over $10,000.
Girl, I should say there's a roll of duct tape right there. Let me snatch the hair out of your cooch so hard that it just, your ass lifts right up. Like, whoop!
That's not how it works.
That's a poizillion when Poyo does it. It's like...
But you know what? I have been on this diet, not really... Well, it's been a diet, but I've been eating healthy. And, like, my appetite was, like, nothing.
When you were sick?
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm, like, at my goal weight now. And...
Bitch, she's like, I've been on a diet. Well, I was just sick for a week. And no, it's the same thing. No.
I've been on, like, eating healthy for, like, at least two months now. And... I'm where I want to be pretty much. Now I just want to tone up.
Okay.
And I'll be fine. So now I can go back to eating a little bit of what I want to every now and then.
That's how it always starts, bitches. Like, I've been on a diet. I'm finally where I want to be. I'm going to have a snack. And then you're like, God damn it. All that weight's back.
Right. You would know.
I sure as fuck would.
You would.
Honey, my weight yo-yos. Mostly it's just yo right now. Because there hasn't been any weight loss in a little bit, so.
I heard that.
Well. But people, the part that sucks, I will tell y'all, some of y'all out there know how this is. When you start to get a little bit older, like, the weight stays on unwanted places, but it's like, I think it's been coming off my face a little bit. People have been like, oh, are you losing weight? And I'm like, no, my face is just getting skinnier, but my tits are huge, so, like.
I hate that. And see, that's another thing. So I still could lose weight in certain areas, but I'm starting to lose weight in my face. And as a trans woman, I don't want that because...
You don't want an angular face.
I don't.
Yeah.
I kind of want a softer, more supple face.
Right.
So that's my key to just stop losing this weight.
You know, I was telling Pearl right before we started, I made a new friend over the weekend.
Oh my God, look at you. You guys, look at Poyo making friends.
I know. I was out. I met... His name is Mono. And...
You caught Mono? Is that what you're trying
to
say?
No, I didn't catch Mono, girl. But I met Mono. And the reason it made me think about it is he's Hawaiian, so he's not...
Oh, Manu. I know Manu. Is he the one... Is he fine?
His name is Mono.
Pull him up.
Well, I mean, I don't have a picture of him or whatever, but his name is Mono. M-A-N-O. Mono.
You don't have...
No, girl. Fuck would I have a picture of him? I just met him over the weekend. No. We're not connected on Facebook. Like, I mean, that's how... But anyway, he's Hawaiian, and he knows Kipper.
It's the one I know.
Probably.
So, that's what I was gonna ask. He is fine, girl.
Yes, he is. And
so lovely. So sweet.
Yeah.
And such a great dancer.
I don't know about that. I know he's
I'm telling you he is.
I know he's very sweet. I know he is very fine. I know if he listens to this, I'm gonna be very embarrassed. It's not like...
Why?
I'm not trying to, like, come on to him or anything like that.
Manu knows he's fine, girl.
He's fine. He's very handsome. Girl, we could be talking... Y'all... So Polynesian names sound a lot alike. We're probably talking about two different people, but they're both attractive. Yeah. And anyway, so I just gave him the information right before this, but it made me, like, when we were talking, it made me think about the fact that just yesterday he asked me, like, do you know Kipper? And I was like, yeah. I'm like, Kipper's making my outfit for the Divas Meets, like, the Design Meets Divas at Drag.
She's actually making mine also.
So, well, fierce. Like, I hope that bitch gets to work, because...
That's another thing. So, they asked me last week if I wanted to do it. So, now I'm doing it. I went and picked up my fabric at the Galleria.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people that are sponsoring me are what I'm wearing is the people that do... I think they do curtains.
Well, listeners, Design Meets Divas of Drag is an annual fashion show / pageant type event, which partners Bay Area drag performers and entertainers with showrooms that generally showcase materials or fabrics that are used in interior design. So, for example, like, you might get a showroom that specializes in curtains, mm-hmm. or a place that specializes in upholstery. And then the idea is to take these fabrics that are not specifically intended for fashion and turn them into high fashion pieces of, you know, clothing, like couture clothing. Yeah. And this year I am being sponsored by Needler Ferrer, and they are, I think that's Needler Ferrer. I'm probably going to fuck it all up. Anyway, I got an amazing showroom, and the design company, or rather the fabric company that's supplying my fabric is Pierre Fry, I think is his name. And it's the fabrics are sickening. So anyway,
mine's is Fabricut, and Linda Starkey is the manager there. And I actually just got my my fabric will be shipped this Friday. And girl, I love the fabric I picked out. I would show you, but I don't.
I love how she's like, I would show you, but meanwhile, last week I showed the bitch my fabric.
I already forgot what it was, girl, so don't worry about it.
Well, anyway, I love my fabric.
Did you show me your fabric?
Yeah, I did. That's when you told me, oh, I'm doing it too. And I was like, you fucking...
I told you last week?
Yes. Like, they just ask you, I guess. And that's when I was like, okay. So, like, thanks, bitch.
Whatever.
Yeah, it was... I'm working with Stacey Bajuniemi at Needler for Share, and Pierre Fry is the name of the designer whose fabric we're using. So, anyway, it's going to be amazing.
It's going to be amazing.
We will keep you guys posted on that.
My only thing is it lands on my brother's birthday, so maybe he'll come out and hang out for a little bit.
That'd be really cute.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, I have already mentioned that this past weekend was insane for me.
So you worked. So I worked with Carney on Saturday. You worked with her on Sunday.
Yes, I did. With Woo Woo Monroe.
Woo Woo Monroe. That's
yes,
right.
We were over at the Port Bar on Sunday for hashtag Blessed Cabaret. But that was already my third day in drag. I was in drag Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Well, girl, that's what you do for a living.
On Friday, you guys, I was like, I was ecstatic. I got to make my stand-up comedy debut.
Uh-huh.
Did you watch the video?
No.
She did not watch the video.
I did not watch the video.
Girl, literally hundreds of people have watched it, and Pearl was not one of them.
Girl, just like you didn't see Untucked, whatever, girl.
You weren't on Untucked, you bitch! She's like, just like you didn't see Untucked.
Whatever, girl.
Anyway, so I made my stand-up comedy debut, and it was kind of about a 12-minute set that was a preview.
I've heard nothing but great things.
That was a preview for what I'm hoping will be a one-woman show.
How long did it take to put it together?
That 12-minute set, like, I thought about that afternoon or whatever.
Oh, sickening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is
that what you performed at Port Bar?
I did not. I did lip syncs at Port Bar.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, but...
So this was just its own project.
This was its own project. I would like to turn this into a one-woman show. And I've had requests from, like, Portland and Seattle and Puerto Vallarta about doing...
Oh, someone's trying to get on the Drag Queens of Comedy.
Well, Sasha did mention that there's a strong possibility that I'll get to do some stuff with that.
Oh, well, fun. So,
yeah, because Sasha... Soprano watched it, and Sasha is the... producer of Drag Queens of Comedy. Well, Sasha and I have known each other for legit since the beginning of both of our drag careers. Like, I started a few months before her.
Girl, we talked about this.
Yeah, and then she started, like, I started in spring and she started in summer, so.
I think she's like a, I don't know what it is, she's like a really good friend of, I think, the trans community. Every time, whether it's me or one of the girls see her, we're always like, hey, Sasha! And she always gets all nervous. It's so cute. Last time I saw her, it was inside of the Walgreens downtown Powell.
What was she doing there?
She was trying to be incognito with these big, you know, her and her big glasses.
Oh, Lord. As it turned out, I saw Sasha on just last night. But so.
Really? She's in the city?
She was up last night. I think she's back home by now, but. So, Friday, I did the stand-up comedy debut, which, thank you to all of the... There's, like, 650 people have watched it, or whatever, on YouTube, which is pretty exciting. And then Saturday,
I'm always curious, because, I mean, we both have at least 2,000 friends. You have almost 4,000 friends. Or you have over 4,000 friends at this point. And it's like you put something out there on your Facebook... But it won't get 4,000 views.
Oh, no. You know, I can't it's imagine so why. Pearl didn't even watch it.
Sick. I've been sick. I've been sick.
Okay, anyway. you know, one of the things that is a reality of, like, Facebook or social media, for example, specifically Facebook wants to monetize your friend list.
Mm-hmm.
So, they only allow you access really to about 10% of your friends.
That's annoying.
It is. Like, if you think about it, you don't see, if you got 2,000 friends, you don't see 2,000 people's posts. Right. You only see, like, the same few people over and over. Mm-hmm. That's because Facebook determines, like, an algorithm that only shows you certain people's stuff. And, like, there are certain people on my friends thing that I have no idea who the hell they are because Facebook has hidden them for so damn
long. For so long. Yes, I was just going through that today.
I mean, you're like, who are you? Like,
there are people that you completely forget about, and you're like, oh my God, I wonder how this bitch has been.
Right, but you don't ever see their stuff because Facebook has this algorithm, and to have access to more of your Facebook friends, you have to basically pay to boost a post.
That's like, annoying.
Right. So, like, for example, I have a friend page and a fan page. For me, the fan page gets good amount of traffic or whatever, but for me to actually access, for Facebook to push it out to all those people, I would have to pay them money. And I'm just like,
how dare you?
Really? It's like,
how dare you?
But anyway, so Friday I did the stand-up thing. Saturday I did, what the hell did I do? Oh, Saturday I did a bachelorette party. And I got to work with Amora and Landa. And then,
oh, Landa. Well, I love Landa.
And then, girl, let me tell you. So I've been doing this Divas Royale versus Hunkamania show periodically over the last number of months.
Mm-hmm.
The drag queens are never a problem, but those fucking male strippers are, some of them are absolute douchebags. Like this.
See, girl, if I would have had to deal with that, girl. No.
Oh, yes.
No.
Homie, like, one of the dudes opens the show. He's very full of himself. That's a given. You can tell it before we ever started the show. Very full of himself. Start the show. He goes out and does his thing, and he, like, most people, like, most of the guys will do three songs. They'll, like, dance for three songs, and so it's, like, 12-minute set or whatever, because this was a huge crowd, and he wanted to get through it or whatever. This dude was, like, dancing, like, three songs go by, four songs go by. Finally, I was like, DJ, we have to cut, you know, he gets 69 more seconds, like, whatever, we have to. And then, like, I'm like, okay, cut the music, and then, like, The DJ is still not cutting it because I guess the guy had given him like 10, I don't even know how many songs. Then finally, it was like, cut the music. We're done with this. We got to move on.
So then
the guy leaves and he goes backstage bitching about like, oh, I'm going to kill that motherfucking DJ. He cut my music and that bitch like cut me off and da 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 da.
Oh, girl.
Which of course, Landa is hearing all this. Then, later on, we go through the rest of the show and there's four male dancers, and then the three drag queens. And so, the drag queens are like, we're coming to the close of our set. We're getting ready to do my final number, which is the close of the show, of the drag set. And there's the third male dancers out there. And all of a sudden, for whatever reason, this guy decides that he's going to go back out and interrupt this guy's set. Because, oh, those girls liked me better than him. So he interrupts it. Meanwhile, the other male dancer sees this and, like, shoves him, I guess. And then he's, like, in the back, he's like, man, he fucking pushed me and whatever. This is ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
So he's going, the first dancer, the one who was, like, wouldn't stop his whatever, was going on and on. And finally, I'm standing there and I'm changing to get ready to go back on. And I turned to him and I was like, look, I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't have anything to do with you as male dancers, but I manage the female half of this show. And what I'll tell you is this, from one performer to another, no matter whether you're a stripper or a drag performer, it doesn't fucking matter if the audience doesn't like the person whose time it is to be out there.
Right.
You don't go out and interrupt their shit because you wouldn't want them to do it to you.
Yeah.
It's inappropriate and it's unprofessional. He's like, oh, well, they told me that they liked me better. I was like,
that
okay.
Doesn't even matter.
Doesn't matter, girl.
So, that's not the point. You missed it again.
Yeah. He's standing there bitching to three other male dancers. And I said, okay, hold on. I get on the line. Would you want him to come out and interrupt your set? No. What about you? Would you think that's okay? Would you, you know, well, no. I was like, of course not. Nobody fucking, it does not matter. I was like, I held up the lineup. I go, see this? Everybody's name is written on here one time. We all get a turn. You got your turn. And I was like, and again, you went longer than everybody else. So you have the least reason to bitch.
Right.
And you went first, meaning the girls had the most money. So that's annoying. Oh, girl, he was, no, I was over him.
Girl.
And he was a dick once before, too. And I was like,
you've had to work with him before.
Yes. And I sure did tell our manager, girl. Anyway.
I'd like to speak to your manager, please.
Girl, I don't have to say that.
Right.
I'm one of two managers of this show.
Right.
And so I called
my... next time, can you guys figure out the show before, the day before?
Well, that doesn't, that has, that part has nothing to do with me. I get the call from New York on Thursday usually saying, I need you on Saturday. So it's like, I've said to my manager, like, we need a little more time if possible, because girls, right. Like, any entertainer wants to have your weekend already booked. You know what I mean? Nobody right. wants to be like, oh,
let me figure this out last minute. Like, I don't have anything else to do.
Right. So anyway, Friday was the comedy, Saturday was the Bachelorette, Sunday I was with Port Bar, Woo Woo, and Carney, and I had a really lovely time there. That place, if you're in Oakland or the East Bay area,
so cute.
It's really adorable, cute. And the people were super nice, and the bartenders are really sexy, mm-hmm. and like, anyway, go check it out. And then on Monday, yesterday, you guys, I went to the Castro Theater for the opening of Stilettos Over Shanghai.
I heard Natalie got to tell her story.
Yes. Absolutely. So, Stilettos Over Shanghai is the story of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence going to Shanghai in 2014, I believe, for Pride in Shanghai. It's the only Pride event in mainland China, and the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence were there. So, the place was packed.
As always.
The show was packed. This was the debut of this film. Sister Roma was putting it together with... It was a benefit for Chechnya. No. Chechnya. I fucking pronounced it the way Roma did. It was a benefit
for
benefit for Chechnya. And it had, like, Tom Amiano was there, and former Senator Mark Leno was there. Tons of, like, local luminaries were there. Some incredible leaders of nonprofit organizations that, for example, like the Rainbow Railroad, which helps raise money and coordinate escape efforts to get people out of Russia where they're being killed. And then...
Oh, this is where Natalie must have been able to tell her story.
And then...
So for you guys that are far out, Natalie Ray is a local performer who came from Russia and is one of our dearest homegirls, that crazy bitch.
Yes. But... And so she also... And because of the fact that we're talking about this on the podcast, and because I would actually, after talking to... I think it would be really informative for people to have... For us to get Natalie on the podcast with us. To talk about that experience. She was on Dateline. Like...
Oh, was she?
Yeah. Like, there was a feature...
You better go, Natalie Ray. I see you.
On Dateline. So, they did a whole expose on gay LGBTQ nightlife in Russia. And it was the story of this Russian nightclub where Natalie Ray got her drag start. And, like, during her time as a performer there... People in Russia are being killed on a regular basis. They're, like, getting beaten in the streets and whatever. While she was performing at this nightclub, there were attacks where they would send toxic gas through the ventilation system.
Yes.
They would...
Tell me about this.
There was an incident where armed gunmen broke into the front of the club and started shooting up shit. There was, like, all kinds of stuff. So, finally, Natalie escapes Russia. She comes to the United States. Well... So Natalie got up and shared her story about being an immigrant because of the fact that this was a fundraiser for Chechnya, where this is happening a lot. And girl, when I tell you that I was fucking in, like, sobbing the entire...
Have you never heard Natalie's story before?
Not really.
Oh my God.
I mean, and so, okay, and that's actually one of the reasons why...
Natalie's story is amazing. I've heard it before when she first moved here because we used to hang out.
Right. Well, I had seen this Dateline thing a long time ago, like not long after I met Natalie. So, but what the part that that had like made me like start sobbing really was that she said in her presentation to the crowd that last night that. She came here because at home she can't be herself. Like, you can be killed. I mean, we don't have it perfect here, you guys, but...
It's not like Chechnya.
It's a far cry from that shit. Like, in Chechnya, they will legitimately not only kill you, but they will kill your entire family for not killing you.
Right.
Like, your family's supposed to, like...
Kill you
or whatever. So she says she shows up here, and it was hilarious. She said, I showed up with, like, I don't know, $500... A bag of clothes and some fake tits or something like that. That's what she said. But it reminded me, and the part that, like, this is what got me, like, is that when I met Natalie, I did not know any of her story. I remember distinctly the very first time I ever met Natalie Ray, the first time I ever laid eyes on her. We were doing this, it was a Sunday night, we were at the cafe doing the Glamazon.
She was wearing her little pink tutu outfit.
She was wearing her pink tutu outfit.
Yeah, I remember that.
She came out and somebody said, Poyo, this is Natalie, we met her, like da-da-da-da, she wants to do a drag show. She wants to be, whatever. I looked at her, she was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know, welcome to the family. Come on, like, what are you doing next week? Uh-huh. And it was right before we were doing a new talent showcase. And originally, I was going to say, like, why don't you come in there? I was like, fuck it. Like,
yeah.
I see what I'm getting here. Like, yeah. Next week, just get in the show. And we put her in the show, and it was just, that was it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And, like, the way we always ran that show was, like, when you're in the family, you're in the family. And it's just, come in.
Right.
And so, once again, like, because of the timing of, like, having just ended that show and everything, hearing Natalie say, and she said, like, on stage, like, I have to thank people like Poya Del Mar who put me in her show and, like, right away and all this stuff. And I had no idea when that happened, like, a few years ago, that she had shown up here, like, running for her life, basically.
Right.
With this dream of becoming a drag persona or personality in the United States. I just put her in the show. And then when I realized, like, wow, like, that must have seemed huge to her. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because there at home, she's, like, fighting. And I was just like, come in. You're just one of us now. Like, right. It just made me so grateful that I had had the opportunity to do that. And a little sad, to be honest, that there's other people who may be in a similar situation that I'm not in a position to help right now. But, oh, my God, I was sobbing. And it was hilarious because afterwards, I'm, like, sitting there, and I'm still sobbing and everything. And Natalie came off the stage and sat between... I was sitting with Mark Leno, and so she sat between me and Mark Leno and gave me a hug, and I just started sobbing, and she's like, get it together, sister!
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I was just like, oh, my God. But I just was like, I can't stop! I can't help it! And I had no tissue. All I had was a fucking hoodie stuffed in my purse. And I kept, like, dabbing my eyes on the hood of the hoodie and, like, wiping my nose on the sleeve.
Oh, my God.
And she's like, get it together!
I love that bitch. But, yes, huge shout-out to Natalie Ray. I saw that, and I was like, oh, we have to give her props.
Yes, and I really want to get her on the show because...
And so you guys can hear her story from her own mouth.
You need to hear her story from her own mouth. And this was something also interesting, Pearl. It was a shame. Like, so when we were there watching the film, like, there were a number of places. And there's a place called Oram. And I don't remember what O-R-A-M. And I don't remember what it stands for specifically. But it's like something, blah, 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 and migration. So basically, it's an organization based here in San Francisco that helps people, it advocates for people who are in places where LGBT people could be killed or whatever, and it helps advocate for them to get out of there and get to safety in the United, primarily in the United States. Mm-hmm. And the woman, she kept talking about the state of LGBTQ rights and life specifically in Africa, which made me think about all of our listeners who are in like Somalia, mm-hmm. Kenya. Those places are horrible.
Right.
Those places are legit horrible. So for our listeners around the world who are in places like where you may be tuning in on the DL listening to this or whatever, you were 100% in my thoughts last night. I told Sasha, I was like, these people are living in places around the world where they could be killed for who they are. Not only do they get policed for their sexual orientation, meaning like any sexual activity they might have, many of these places also police your behavior. So if you act too feminine or whatever.
Girl, it's your ass.
Exactly. And I was thinking to myself, I told Sasha, I was like,
I would have been dead, girl.
Well, so would I, bitch. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, you know, different extremes, but yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But I told Sasha, I was like, can you imagine these people are trapped in some place that is so oppressive, like Kenya or Uganda? And Pearl and I are their only outlet? I was like, this is like one injustice added to another. I was like, as if life is not fair, like unfair right. enough, bitch. They're stuck with Pearl and I, or is there like
right
resource to get to the gay world?
Those poor people. You know,
Girl. It was, anyway, it was very successful. Congratulations to Sister Roma, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. I know that a number of people, like, I think that the San Francisco Ducal Council and Kylie Minogue and other people were there raising money for a variety of charities. So I hope that...
Girl, speaking of worldly things...
Uh-oh.
Girl, are we going to war with North Korea or not?
Girl, it's like...
This is in...
Meanwhile, all of this is happening, and our president is on a golf vacation.
Girl, right.
I mean, shit is, like, hitting the fan, and our president is golfing. Honestly, we're probably better off that he is gone.
We probably are.
Because...
But Jesus, he has got the biggest goddamn mouth.
All the everything is just so problematic. And, like, you know, people who were supportive of Donald Trump's campaign before...
Can kiss my ass, girl. Well,
what I was going to say is that people who were supportive of his campaign, one of the things that they were so hyped about is the fact that, well, this is a person who is not a career politician, who doesn't... Well, that may be good in some capacities if it were somebody else besides Donald Trump.
Right.
But the reality is that a lot of the things that people think of as really negative about career politicians, and I use negative in quotes here, you guys, is like actually really beneficial in the long run. Like people are like, a politician will like look right at you and lie right to your face. That's called diplomacy when you're like,
right.
Like you have to be able to like be diplomatic.
You know, tell some other goddamn state that you are going to show them power that they've never seen before.
Like, this whole thing is just Jesus. Absurd. And, you know, what he's doing is he's backing us into a corner that we are going to have to end up looking weak as a country. Because otherwise, we're going to have to, like, support what he's doing. And that is ridiculous. The government needs to really fucking take control of this situation. They need to get him out before the, like... People might have elected him.
It hasn't even been a year, bitch.
It's barely been 6 months.
Right.
It's now August. He was put into the office on January 20th.
Girl.
So we are not even at the 7 month marker yet, and he's about to get everybody killed. Like, unbelievable.
I just keep thinking I'm going to see, like, this big flash of green light, and...
That was it.
That was it.
That's the end of us all. All right, you guys. On that bleak note, let's... well, we'll be back in a flash of green light with more Party Foul Radio right after this. For all the latest LGBT-related travel and entertainment news around the world, visit Australia's premier LGBTQ website, GuideToGay.com. That's GuideToGay.com, proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants are a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio, available at fine retailers near you. Follow Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants on Twitter at @UseSwissNavy. That's Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. All right, everybody, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I am Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
Shout out to a friend of the podcast and a good buddy of mine, Gypsta. Yes, boo. He recently got written up a nice feature in Billboard magazine. Billboard magazine is the Bible of the music industry.
Come on, Billboard.
Yes, girl. He is a multiple-time charting Billboard dance recording artist.
And we've had him on the show before. So if you missed that, go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah, just go search for Gypsta on Party Foul Radio. But he got a write-up on his latest album. It's called Bantuzzle, and it is his first album since a brutal hate crime happened to him in New York City a few years back. And Billboard talked to him about that, plus what it means to him to have the support of huge drag celebrities. I mean, he's been on a featured artist on a track from RuPaul on Sexy Drag Queen. He's done videos with Willem and Pandora Box and a number of our other drag favorites. So go look him up. It's Gypsta, Gypsta. Congratulations, boo, on your big write-up in Billboard magazine.
Big heart out to you.
Yes, absolutely. So, oh, and just a heads up, y'all. Gypsta and I are looking to be shooting a music video together because we have a track together on Bantuzzle with DJ Ranny Oliveira. And we are going to put together a music video and put that track out, I think, by the end of the summer. Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Girl, when does the summer end?
What?
When does the summer end?
When school starts back. Like, so September. Like, we're looking to start work on it in the next month or so. So it might be out in early fall, I guess.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, another... Oh, I want to also give a quick shout out to another friend of the podcast. We've had her on twice. Miss Kim Sims. Congratulations, Kim.
Oh, yes.
Girl, her...
I love her.
Yes, of course we love Miss Kim Sims. And her new single, Turn It Up, which we had her on talking about...
It's doing amazing, you guys.
It is. It is up to number 13 on Billboard Dance Charts. So you guys need to go... It's K-Y-M... S-I-M-S. Go look her up on YouTube. Look up all of the fierce remixes, bitch, of Turn It Up and find out why it is setting dance floors on fire. Kim is back with a vengeance, Henty. So, and of course, Pearl and I make split-second cameos in her music video. Yeah, girl, it's like the video edit is so fast. Hopefully, maybe they'll do a different edit for like some of the remixes where we'll actually be able to be seen. The only drag queen you can see in that whole fucking video is Anna Lee. And Paju a couple times.
Oh, I don't even remember if I had boobs at that point, so I don't care.
You did.
Oh, I did?
Yeah. Okay, it was like a few months ago.
Yeah, that's when I was realizing I was getting kind of chubby. Anyway.
Oh, Lord. So Pearl's only in it for a second, but you see all of her. Like, lots and lots
how
of...
rude.
Many, many pounds of Pearl. They'd be rude. Like, how big was that fucking oyster? Right.
Shit.
That's a whole lot of pearl, bitch.
Right.
But you know that a black pearl is the most valuable.
You know.
Okay. So, anyway, this coming Saturday, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, you need to get out. I'm not exactly sure where this is going to be, but Shigellarella and I are doing the Million Cat March.
Oh, shit.
With Lexi Shimmers, honey.
Oh, shit. Shit, that's going to be lit. I wish I could get that. I wish I could come just to record the experience.
Oh, my God.
I would have to be drunk, but I would be down.
It's from, like...
I know that's going to be such an experience. I'm jealous. How did this happen?
She called me and was like...
Which one?
Lexi.
Lexi called you.
Well, Lexi messaged me. Girl, I am not stupid enough to give Lexi my home phone number. But she Facebook messaged me, and she's like, would you be interested in doing my Million Cat March? And I'm... First of all, you know it's going to be, like, five of us. There ain't going to be no kind of million cats. But...
it's going to be a bunch of people dressed up as cats.
Yes. She also, it's like, I don't understand why it's a cat. I don't understand what it's about the cat. It's about, like, suicide, but it's cats. It's Lexi.
Oh, nine lives. Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe that's it. Maybe the fact that every cat has nine lives, they'll be like...
You want to take every... I don't know.
I have no idea, girl, but... It's the Million Cat March this Saturday in San Francisco. Lexi Shimmers will be taking time away from her busy 100-man circle jerks at Nob Hill Theater to get up there. Don't you worry. She'll be out there kissing babies and shaking hands. But when you shake her hand, be sure to use Purell because you know where that hand's been, motherfucker. Everybody knows where that hand's been, bitch. Right.
Ugh.
Oh,
girl.
Oh, my God. Talking about Lexi and hands makes me think back to the Sneaky Fister.
Oh,
remember when she got sneakily fisted by accident?
Girl, I was... Oh, God.
Oh. Anyway, so that's happening.
Oh, my God.
There is so much going on in the San Francisco Bay Area these days that I'm not sure... Lexi's paying me to do the Million Cat March, by the way. I did not volunteer. I was like...
Because, you know, Poyo doesn't volunteer.
I do volunteer, but I was like, I know you make all kinds of good money as a nurse, bitch.
Right.
So you better pay me to be a cat. I better be getting paid. I'll be like, meow. I'll fucking meow like a motherfucker for $100. Meow.
Oh, my God.
And Shigella's just doing it because she likes cats.
Oh, my God.
She's like, I love cats. She like... Put it on her calendar hella fast. She's like, oh, Million Cats. I was like, oh Jesus. So anyway,
is she gonna dress up?
Yeah.
I live.
Yeah. She and then not this coming weekend, but the weekend after, Shigella and her daughter Vicky Sparkle Tits make their debut as a mother daughter duo on stage, and they're doing
where?
Some at Mascara with Angela Grant.
Okay. Lovely.
So Shigella has been like buying up drag clothes to beat the band, and I gave her my old hip pads. She was like, tell Pearl I got my free pads out of
this.
So anyway, she lives. I live.
Oh, Shigella.
So, oh my God. All right, you guys, we are going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we are going to have the first of two pre-recorded interviews on this episode. This is, consider this our independent music scene episode, because we are going to take you, when we come back, inside the band Transviolet. I discovered them, again, this is a connection to Billboard Magazine. I follow Billboard Magazine religiously on social media, and they did an interview with Transviolet, and in the interview, they talked about being really outspoken advocates for the LGBTQ community. And it made me very interested. You know, at first, with the name Transviolet, I thought it might have something to do with that. It doesn't.
I'm sure. I mean, it's Transviolet, girl.
So, well, you never know, bitch. They
turn from blue to violet, girl?
Well, I don't know, honey. They could have been, like, we started out a different color, but we realized we were actually...
Oh, girl, bye.
So, anyway, no. But I did think, you know, you never know. It could have been anything. Like,
it could, with people nowadays, it could have been everything. But, right.
But I didn't know, but I looked them up, and I was really taken with the fact that it is a woman, who we will be speaking to later in the show, Sarah, and three straight men. Like, three heterosexual men, so... The fact that they are such outspoken advocates in their entirety of the group.
They're all cis people.
Yes, okay. All cisgender people. So, and I thought that was really intriguing. So we are very excited. I'm very excited to have Sarah from Transviolet on. And then later in the episode, we will be speaking to Grace Mitchell. You guys need to check her out. Grace Mitchell. Look up, actually, both Transviolet and Grace Mitchell on YouTube. Incredible music selection. Very, very different types of artists. Grace's voice is sickening. Anyway, we'll have Transviolet right after this. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
We'll be back in a second.
Oh, she really came that way?
All right.
My name is Alyssa Edwards.
All right.
I'm known as the Vanessa Williams of drag.
All right.
I am here to show people I still got it.
All right.
I need to
get up in this gig, girl.
My name is Alyssa Edwards, and this is Party Styles Radio.
I don't get cute, I get drop dead gorgeous.
Against the wall, I don't know what I'm saying. Why is it so hard to believe it'll be okay? Oh, feels like all is lost. I don't know what to do. I'm probably gonna cry. I can't hide it from you. Something in your eyes like a light. Your hips on mine, colors in my head explode just like.
We're back with more Party Foul Radio. I am Poyo Del Mar, and that was Transviolet with the lead singer Sarah McTaggart, who was our guest at this time. Transviolet is a quartet based in Los Angeles, which includes Sarah McTaggart, Judah McCarthy, Michael Panic, and John Garcia. They debuted in 2015 with their self-titled EP, Transviolet, and they returned on June 30th with their sophomore set titled Kaleidoscopes. Of course, that was the title track from this album that we were just listening to. Transviolet is currently on tour around the world, and we are happy to have Sarah on with us at this time. Welcome to Party Foul Radio, Sarah McTaggart, everyone. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how's it going?
I am doing great. I'm excited that we're getting an opportunity to talk after our wonderful Twitter exchange, so thank you so much.
I know. So, I'm so excited. I was so stoked when I saw that, you know, we scheduled an interview together.
Yeah, well, I'm excited too. I became aware of you guys because you recently played for Billboard Magazine, and I'm a voracious reader of Billboard Magazine. So as soon as I saw that you guys were with them, I started listening to your music, and here we are.
Oh, that's awesome.
of course, I was researching, and before we even talk about kaleidoscopes as a body of work, I love the fact that you, as a group, especially since there's three men in the group, are such strong supporters of equality, especially for the LGBT community.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's, like I said online, we all don't think it's a very radical idea to be able to love who you love and who you are. This should just be normal in 2017. It confuses and confounds me that we're still having this conversation in this day and age and that certain people still have a problem with it. I mean, I get that, you know, everyone has their own personal beliefs and personal religion, but personal religion should not interfere with public civil liberties. It never should.
Right. It seems, especially in this country where we're supposed to separate those two things.
Exactly. And the same people that, like, have this argument, you know, will be the first to tell you they don't want the government getting into their church, but they're fine with the church coming into the government. So I'm not into that.
Yeah, that is a real frustrating factor, because what you say is exactly right. It's like the government should stay out of the church, but the church should have everything to do with government, and it's unfortunate. I think that...
One of the four people in our band is Christian, too, and, like, he is just as much, like, the biggest supporter of, you know, gay rights and LGBTQ rights as well, because, like, he understands that, you know, he knows his religion is his personal religion, and it shouldn't affect other individuals' freedom or, you know, ability to love and be who they are.
Right. I think that in the reality of situations is that whatever any of us is doing in our own personal life doesn't have to impact the other people unless we allow it to. You know what I mean? Like, my sexuality...
Exactly.
...doesn't impact anything about you, and yours doesn't impact anything about me or your religion. You know what I mean? If we... It's just like, okay, well, that's you, and this is me, and we're good. We're both good.
Exactly. I know. I feel like I've had conversations with, like, full-grown adults to where it literally boils down to them being like, well, I don't think, you know, gays should get married because it's, you know, it's gross or, like, it's icky. It's like, well, I don't want to think about you having sex with anybody either. I think that's icky. Like, should you not be allowed to love who you want to love or have sex with who you want to have sex with? That's just childish.
Right. And unfortunately, I'm going to tell you, Sarah, in my opinion, it's usually the people who imagining them having any kind of sexual interaction or being anyone even being attracted to them is icky, icky, icky. Because you're like, you of all people, I don't want to imagine. So,
yeah.
So exactly. Now I really want to say that your band, I love the story of how you were almost ready to, like, sort of give up your dreams of, you know, doing music because you were working so many jobs, all these things. Like, I read up on you, and you personally were ready to, like, give up. And then basically after all these years of struggle overnight in, like, a week's time, you guys were playing for, and then a month later signed to a record label. It's really quite incredible.
It was so serendipitous and insane. It literally, like, happened because my mom had a conversation with somebody on an airplane. And, yeah, a week later, we were signed to a label.
You have to love a pushy mom.
I know. And what's crazy, she's really, like, not, like, pushy. She's just, like, so, like, super proud. But she's definitely one of those moms that's, like, you know, super, super supportive mom. Like, it's just, like, in everybody's face about, oh, this is my daughter. This is my daughter's band. Like, listen to her music. Every time I talk to her, she's, like, well, I have you playing on Spotify in my office 24/7, and people ask me what it is, and I tell them it's your band, and I share it on my Facebook page and on my Twitter. I was like, that's great, Mom. Thanks, Mom. She's the best.
Yeah, exactly. And I have a mom very similar to that, and one of the things that I always find, especially with the LGBTQ community, because not everyone has a mom like that, so when people see a mother who is so proud and supportive of their child, they feel inspired. And, you know, my mom became, like, the mom of, like, everyone, because her philosophy has always been, like, if you don't have a mom that's going to support you, I'll support you. You know what I mean? So it's wonderful that you have that.
Aw, that's so cute. That's amazing.
And it worked out very well for you guys. I mean, look at that. She was like, you need to do my daughter's hair.
Exactly. I know. And again, hairstylist, making it come together, the ultimate connectors.
So since getting your record deal, you've really gotten support from some really high-profile people. I mean, I was reading that Harry Styles and Katy Perry are both big fans of your work. And as a new artist, what is it like to have people that presumably, before you were signed to your deal, that you were fans of their music, possibly, supporting you?
It's so flattering, and it's, like, so surreal when it's happening. I mean, the Katy Perry thing, you know, it's kind of strange because Katy Perry and I actually kind of grew up together. Like, we went to the same church and, like, we're singing in, like, the same church and stuff when we were younger, and then kind of lost touch. But her mother and my mother, again, it comes back to my mom, are still, like, super close. So when we released Girls Your Age, my mom, you know, like, texted her mom the link, like, oh, like, Sarah released a new song, like, in the same way. Like, it'd be like, oh, Sarah just got her, you know, high school diploma. It was like that, you know, and I think her mom showed Katy, and then Katy ended up sharing it, which was, like, so helpful and so sweet of her, and we're so grateful. But, yeah, that was super surreal. And then the Harry Styles thing was just, like, completely random. Like, I, you know, and it was, yeah, it's definitely crazy to see the effect that has on social media. And their fans are so passionate and ravenous, you know, when it comes to new music and new artists.
The new album specifically has been drawn comparisons to people from Lorde to Halsey, and I was wondering what it's like as an emerging artist to find yourself faced with those kind of comparisons. You know, when you're trying to find your own voice,
I mean,
is it helpful or hurtful?
Yeah, I think people, like, some people might find it, like, offensive, but I don't find it offensive. I think people are always going to try to take something new and compare it to something that they know, and I love Lorde and Halsey, so I don't find it offensive at all. In fact, like, when people ask us for our genre of music, I really hate labeling something as a genre because I think it puts it in a box. But it's easier to say something like, oh, you'd find us on the same Pandora channel as Lorde or Lana Del Rey or Santa Gold or Sylvanesso, you know?
Right. I think that...
Oh, I do, too.
Of course, you know, I think that it is one of the, it's a genre type of thing. And many people these days completely defy genre for the most part, other than maybe like it's pop, you know what I mean? Or it's whatever.
Yeah.
So when you guys sat down to put together Kaleidoscopes, what goes into the process of shaping an entire body of work like that?
I mean, for me, when I write, I think it's a little different than most people write because I don't really even like to think about an entire body of work. I just kind of work on each song individually and hope it somehow comes together as something cohesive. I guess it always tends to work out, though, because it's, you know, it's my voice, it's my perspective, and the guy's, you know, the guy's sonic influence as well. It always kind of brings it together. But, yeah, my focus is always just, I want to sit down, I want to write a story, I want to make something emotive and authentic, and I don't really set any other rules aside from that, so that's why each song has, you know, its own identity. There is no, like, okay, I'm going to make a pop album, or I'm going to make an alternative album, or I'm going to make a XYZ album. It's just, I'm just trying to write stories that make me feel.
Since you are the sole female in this, out of a quartet, how much do you find yourself having to fight to have your feminine voice heard by the men?
The guys are, like, super supportive of giving me a platform to voice my opinions, and they're all, you know, feminists, so that really, like, helps. They're always, like, stepping up to my defense and you know, really letting me have a platform to speak and letting me speak when I need to say something, and they're never... Yeah, we don't really have that issue in this band. I mean, everyone's super supportive. In fact, there's been times where, you know, maybe if I were to have come and defended myself, it would look defensive, or it would look like I was being, like, a crazy mad feminist, and that's when the guys have actually stepped up and be like, hey, like, this is sexist or this is fucked up. And, you know, in that way, they use their male privilege to help me. And, like, you know, for instance, one time we were at this party, and there was this guy, like, just typical, like, chauvinist dude, you know, fucking leather vest with no shirt on kind of guy, like, old school Hollywood rocker, and, you know, has all these ideas about what being a musician is, and was very happy to share those opinions with us. And I'd gotten up to, you know, go drink or something, and he kind of leans over to Judah and says something like, what's it like touring with someone who bleeds? And,
shut up.
And he kind of, like, looked at him like he was, exactly, so fucking gross, and you're such a Neanderthal. And Judah just says, without missing a beat, everybody bleeds, man. And that was just the end of it. You know, so it's like, we have moments like that all the time where it's just like, the guys, you know, step up and really show me, you know, who they are as people. And it's always inspiring, and it makes me proud to be their band member.
Yeah, and it seems phenomenal considering that you guys basically met online and without ever, you know what I mean, sort of knowing one another prior to that. I mean, it'd be one thing if you sort of came together really super organically, like over shared views or whatever. You guys came together over shared internet.
I know. Yeah, it's like so crazy. That's another crazy story. And it, again, ties into the serendipitous theme of this band. But yeah, I mean, we were just really lucky to have so many of the same views and share so many of the same views. But I will say that making music together is one of the most intimate things you can do. And I do believe that there are, you know, things that come across in music that don't need words, that you can hear, you know. I mean, when I first heard the first track that Mike sent me, I knew that there was, you know, this was a like-minded soul, and this was somebody I wanted to work with right away. So we clicked immediately, and even though, yeah, we started online, you know, there was emails being sent back and forth for like a year, and Skype conversations, and we really, you know, by the time I've moved and moved to San Diego, like, we knew each other very well.
Yeah, it's one of those that you mentioned, like, that sort of intangible thing that I really do believe comes across in music. Like, sometimes you'll have an amazing vocalist and amazing producers, amazing musicians, but they just don't seem to gel. There's just not that kind of sonic thing that comes together where you can tell everyone's on the same page. And I think that makes a huge difference.
Oh, definitely. You have to be on the same wavelength, you know, and it's like, whenever I listen to Sigur Rós, it always makes me feel like that. You know, like, I'm listening to this music, I don't understand the language at all, but, like, here I am listening to this beautiful music crying, you know? And it's like, there's just something there that, you know, it's not measurable, that transcends all language, transcends all culture, all religion, all sexuality, everything, and connects us. And that's what's so beautiful about music.
You and I share the very identical view on that subject matter, because I think that that's what allows people to write about personal experiences that somehow become universal emotion. You know what I mean? It's like, it really does prove why people should focus so much less on differences between gender identities and sexual identities and religious identities, and just focus on the humanity. Because if music is universal, that means emotion is universal and feelings are universal, and we should focus on that so that we can find a way to bring everybody together as opposed to separating everybody constantly.
It's so true. I mean, labels, you know, they help us break up each other into groups, but I don't really think that they do much as far as connecting us. You know, it just further separates us. So I think the sooner we can kind of do away with labels or not look at them as defining characteristics, but just more, you know, identifiers than anything else, we can progress.
Did you
connect on a deeper level?
It sounds like you actually read a tweet that I made yesterday, because I said that people who identify people based on qualifiers aren't seeing people at all. You know what I mean? It's like, if you see a person as black, gay, straight, white, old, young, attractive, whatever, then you're not really seeing the person. It's that you're just seeing whatever is physically in front of you. And that means that
That's funny. I didn't even see a tweet, but I 100% agree.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I mean, a person isn't the color of their skin or the person they're attracted to. I mean, we're a collection of our experiences, of our perspectives, of our emotions, of our personality, of conversations we have, of ideas we've had, of places we've been. I mean, there's so many things that are so much more interesting than the color of our skin or who we fuck. Like, that's just like such like surface level bullshit, and if we can get past that, we can see that, wow, like I have so much more in common with this person. Like, yeah, I've had that kind of experience, or like, wow, like I felt that kind of emotion, or I've had that pain, I share that pain. That's human,
right? I mean, I think that certainly we have all had, you know, if I had to describe to you my best female friend, I would say she's black, she's this age, you know what I mean? But that's not how I think of her. I think of her as 25 years of shared experiences and how much we have in common, you know what I mean? That is what she is as a person to me. And I'm sure that's exactly how it is with anyone when you really love people or know somebody. Like, unless you have to describe them so somebody can pick them out in a crowd, that is not what's important to you.
I mean, I think most people, you know, when we think of somebody, the first thing that comes to mind isn't maybe even something you can put into words. It's more just like how they make you feel.
Absolutely. I think that's, there's an old saying that, you know, is very true, that people, if you're a performer or an artist of some kind or whatever, it's, people might not remember how great you sounded on stage or how beautiful you looked or any of that. They're going to remember how you made them feel. And for you as a musician, that's going to be through your voice, through your interactions, you know, and that's really what brings people together.
Definitely.
Well, Sarah, I want to respect your time, and I know that you are busy, and I appreciate that you guys are traveling, you're touring, you're recording and releasing new music, but I'm really grateful that you took some time out today to talk to me and to our podcast listeners.
Well, this was so much fun.
Yeah, well, it's helpful.
Yeah, this is so great.
It's helpful that we seem to share a similar mindset.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of hard when you're speaking with someone and it becomes just really obvious that you were sharing your views. But yeah, no, I'm so glad we have this opportunity. Where are you located? Are you in Los Angeles or New York?
I'm in San Francisco. You're wrong on both parts. I'm in San Francisco.
Oh. I don't know why I just assumed it'd be one of those two. Oh, cool. That's awesome.
So,
well, I'd love to, like, come see a drag show or something one day. It looks like so much fun.
Yeah, well, I would love for that too, and I would love for you guys to come to San Francisco so I can come and catch your live act.
Yes, we're so down. We missed San Francisco on the last tour because I ended up getting pneumonia and got so sick, but so we definitely owe San Francisco another show, like, as soon as possible.
Well, we look forward to it, and I'm loving the new music. I'm very excited. I like the campy elements of the Hamptons, so I'm very down, and I can't wait to see you guys live.
Hell yeah. All right, well, we'll see you soon.
All right, have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
You too. Bye.
All right, you guys, that was Sarah McTaggart, who is the lead singer of the group Transviolet. Transviolet's new album, Kaleidoscopes, is available now on iTunes. Run out and download that, or go over to YouTube and catch their videos for new songs like The Hamptons or old favorites like New Bohemia. All of those are available. Check them out. Once again, that's Transviolet and Sarah McTaggart of the group. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I am Poya Del Mar, and we will be back with more right after this break. Every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, Northern California's most beautiful LGBTQ publication. Left Magazine includes terrific celebrity interviews, fabulous photo pictorials, and all of the latest details on the Northern California LGBTQ entertainment and nightlife scene.
Pick up your copy in the Castro today of Left Magazine or visit Left Magazine online at liveleft.com. That's liveleft.com. Left Magazine is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. To make sure you always look your best, go over to Daddy's Barbershop, 4102 19th Street at Castro in the Castro District of San Francisco to get your hair cut by Arlen, Jesse, and all the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop. Daddy's Barbershop was voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Daddy's Barbershop, 4102 19th Street in the Castro, is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Miss Poet Almar. This time we're going to go right into another pre-recorded interview. As I said, this is our independent music scene episode. And we just heard from Trans Violet, Sarah McTaggart of Trans Violet, was talking all about their new album, Kaleidoscopes, now available. And at this time, we're taking you to an interview with Portland-based singer Grace Mitchell. Grace first showed up on the music scene in 2014 with her EP titled Design and returned the next year with Race Day, her follow-up sophomore album. She now has a series of new singles that are available. You can check them out. They are Cali God, Come Back For You, Nolo, and much more. She just dropped an unexpected new single called Capital Letters. Please welcome to Party Foul Radio, this is Grace Mitchell, everyone.
Hello.
Grace.
Hi, yes.
Hi, it's Poet Almar.
Hi there. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you, too. So, first of all, thank you so much for talking today. I really appreciate it. And
of course.
And I've really been enjoying the music that I was being sent by you. And even here on the phone, I was going to say about your music, but even here on the phone, your voice sounds so much more mature than 19 years old.
Thanks, yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, I mean, I don't think that there's anything wrong with having a voice of a 19-year-old, but I think that what strikes me is both in the quality of the voice, but also the emotion that you pack into your songs seems to exceed such a youthful individual.
Great.
You probably get that a lot, I'm sure, but.
I get it pretty often. I'm not gonna lie.
But then again, I was reading up about you, and it said that you started traveling back and forth to LA to record music and started writing your own songs and lyrics when you were like preteen age. So I was wondering if you could tell me more about that.
Yeah, I've been coming down to LA since I was about 15 or 14, and going to the studio and writing music, kind of like doing some creative expression since then, and it's developed over time. I've released a couple EPs in the meantime, and have been basically ramping up to release this full-length album that is happening right now that we're releasing single by single. And, I've been doing it for a while, and thankfully now I feel like my sound has been more and more solidified as each, like, new material has been released. Because in the beginning I was, like, experimenting with, like, electronic music and going for, like, a more ethereal sound, and now it's kind of more instrumental, it's, like, guitars and, like, live drums and, like, live keys, and it's going in more of a direction that I've always wanted to go, which is kind of more instrument-driven and more acoustic, but also kind of more rock and edgier. I like what's happening right now.
It's very interesting that you describe this kind of evolution of your music, because some of the people that you've been compared to musically in the past are people as far-ranging as Banks and Lorde to... I read that you were inspired by Alanis Morissette, and so, but each of, hello? We lost each other. Curses. Maybe she hung up on me when I said that, when I drew a comparison to people. God, this is the.
Lost, yeah, oops.
Oh my God, I was
You're
like.
Alanis Morissette was the last thing I heard.
Yeah, I know, I was like, I started listing off people and maybe she just got offended. She was like, I never was inspired by that person. Just. No,
those are all good. I like all this stuff.
Well, but what I was saying is that it's very interesting to me as a person who is a kind of a connoisseur of music is that, you know, each of those artists at various times in their career have gone from something that was more electronic based to more, or from rock based to electronic based. I look at Alanis Morissette and she went directly from rock to electronica for what was personally my favorite album of hers. And then, you know, and then the same thing, Lorde went from instrumentations to electronica on the new music. So I was wondering if you could talk about that evolution for you leading up to your actual first album.
Yeah, I started performing and writing music, acoustic instruments like piano and guitar, and was always highly influenced and listening to all the time more rock-based musicians and artists. And then when I was, like, in middle school, I started listening to more, like, EDM and electronic music. And, like, Biggs is another good example. I was listening to her, thinking that I really liked this kind of, like, dark and ethereal synth-based music. And then I started gravitating away from that a little bit as I started wanting to pursue and make this full-length album because I wanted to get back to the visceral feeling of writing on like acoustic instruments and writing on electric guitar as well. That felt more natural and more like me. And as the evolution of the album is like coming together, the creative vision is kind of like unfolding. I'm trying to notice more and more that the rock side and like, you know.
Grace, we've cut out. Curses. I'll call her back.
Hello there. Sorry about all that.
Gosh, if you didn't want to talk, Grace, you should have just said so.
I'm up in the hills right now, so the reception is awful. Can I FaceTime audio you? It's much easier.
Yeah, totally.
Good to meet you.
Good meeting you. So, on FaceTime, it's a totally different experience when you interview somebody.
Yeah, it's kind of nicer. It's, like, it's more personal.
You can actually... you have, like, a wild mane of hair.
It's... I just woke up, so it's even wilder.
It's amazing, though. You're beautiful. It looks so, like, cabin-y. Oh,
thank you.
I mean, fresh... She just woke up, listeners, and she's fresh-faced and gorgeous.
Thank you. It's like, you look great, too.
Thank you. It's the benefit, you guys, of being 19. She's like 19. You're 19, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, totally. You can wake up and just be like, oh, well, I'm just going to go out and look stunning.
Hold on to it forever and ever.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because we were talking about your musical evolution, and
yes.
I think for a person who is putting out their very first album, I mean, you've had singles in the past, but this is your first full body of work. It must be really difficult because there's no musician or no person on earth that I know of who exclusively likes one kind of music.
Of course, yeah.
And when you're a musician, I would think that the desire to explore as many of those avenues as possible probably is like inherent in you. And yet you're trying to find like a solid singular voice so that your album doesn't kind of sound all over the place.
Yeah. That's actually a serious issue. Oh, yeah, a lot of artists, and especially me, because I like so many different things. But I think that as far as like branding and marketing purposes, finding the thing that you gravitate to the most can be like a healthy practice for me as an artist, because I can expand on that and then incorporate more things later. Like, it's important, I feel like, to start from one identifying place and then branch off when it feels like things are evolving. Like, that's what I did with the first EP as well. Like, I had one sound really wanted to follow, and then as it started evolving, following that thing, because you're doing everything at the same time is just confusing. And especially for listeners and fans and stuff, if you're doing all things at once, they just, like, don't know what to do. But if I could, I probably would do everything at once if I could.
Yeah, I think what happens is sometimes when an artist does that, like, say if I heard your song and then bought the album and then it was, like, totally not in that same genre, they get disappointed. And I've had that experience many times in the past. Thank God we're in an electronic era where I can just digitally download one or two songs that speak to me the most. But back in the day, it was like a situation where many, many times I bought an album and nothing else on the record sounded like what was on the radio or what I was interested in.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely. That's what's so wonderful about, it's what's so cruel about this generation, but also so wonderful about it, is that it's very cool for artists to release full-length albums now. Really a wise decision now with streaming and playlists to release, like, single at a time.
Right.
Because then the songs on the album won't get appreciated like they should, and if they all have their own rollout, it's much easier to, like, be like, this is a body of work, which is something that I didn't understand until I started working with my label and trying to figure out how we were going to release this album, and I found that it's been a lot easier to release single by single instead of releasing, like, a whole thing, because all my songs are different. They're very different from one another, but all kind of living in the same, like, alternative rock realm.
Yeah, I think that for a lot of artists these days, the idea of putting out an entire album is appealing because that's what the status quo has been. But I think that unless you're somebody like really, really huge that has all the money and the financial backing to do that properly, a lot of people I think are simply doing it single by single or track by track because it allows people to just individually consume a particular piece of music and then, you know, what comes next could be different if they choose it to be, or, you know, there's kind of less rules of the game.
100%, yeah.
So, now, you are based in the Portland area, and I know that that music scene is extremely diverse, and I was wondering if you could kind of talk about how that's influenced you.
Yeah, I grew up in the Portland area. I live in LA now, but I feel... Like, if anything, I feel like a lot of the Los Angeles music scene had really influenced me, because growing up, there was, like, a lot of, especially in my small town, there was a lot of, like, bluegrass and, like, folk Americana happening and coming through, and, like, that, I feel like, is what everyone was interested in, and then coming down to L.A., there's more of a punk rock scene, there's more of, like, a electronic scene, there's a lot more diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Coming down to L.A. actually influenced what I was doing. I was really inspired to perform and like, make friends in the music community, because there's so much diversity. It's, like, so much music. So many people are really talented. Where in, like, in Oregon, you can kind of be a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah.
Everyone here is fighting for the same thing. And in Oregon, it's, like, you can be very, like, mediocre and be, like, the most fabulous musician there, I feel like.
Right. Well, I think that any industry can be like that. When you, it's much easier to reach the pinnacle of success in a small localized area than someplace where Los Angeles, you know, is notorious for bringing the prettiest girl from every town, the, you know, the best singer from every town. And then they get to Los Angeles and they realize that, oh, maybe I'm not as pretty or perfect or as talented or whatever it is as I thought I was. It's a rude awakening for some people.
I think it's healthy. I think it's a good vibe.
So, I mean, I definitely think that one of the things that I particularly love about a major metropolitan area, whether that's LA or San Francisco where I live or New York, is that it brings so many different people with incredible talents together, and they all want to accomplish something. So it allows for this, like, really collaborative feeling where people's talents can come together, and it's kind of like food where, you know, like, it's individually it's great, but when it's, like, in the right combination, it's, like, amazing kind of thing. And I think that about the talent that happens in major metropolitan areas.
Yeah, certainly.
So one of the things that every single time I've read anything about you, it talks about how tall you are. And how tall are you?
I'm like 6 foot.
Okay, well, that's tall, but not like... They make you sound like you're 7 foot tall, like a true giant.
No, I'm like 6 foot. It's just, yeah, it's funny. But it's like, I don't know. I wear heels a lot on stage and out. So maybe it's people meet me and I'm much, much taller. But, yeah, I'm like 6 foot.
But, well, I think that the fact that you still wear heels and you're, like, unabashed about that is great. My mom, growing up, my parents were different heights. My dad was shorter than my mom. And... he was so threatened by that he would never let her wear heels, you know? And she's only like 5'7", but he was 5'4". So when a tall woman owns that and like, nope, I'm still going to do what I want to do. And no wonder. Okay. So now you and I are the same height. So the fact that when I'm in heels, I'm like really, really tall and towering too. So I can imagine you'd make an imposing personality, like striding across the floor towards people.
I like it. I like it a lot. I love going out and like nightlife and stuff and being that tall because there are so many people, like so many beautiful people from all over the place, and they all come together. And when you're the tallest one of all of them, it makes you feel unique, and it's fun. I like being the tallest one.
Okay, so I want to make a commentary on some of the visuals I've seen of you, and this could come across totally wrong. Thank God we're on FaceTime so you can see me, understand that I'm not meaning this offensively, and my podcast co-host will listen to this and cringe because I'm always the one who's like, this could offend you, but you... The visuals that I've seen from you often play down, in my opinion, how extremely naturally beautiful you are. Like, they kind of, like, playing you down. And I was wondering if there's any element of that that's intentional.
I think that up until recently, I've been, like... I just recently got a new director on board with my team.
Uh-huh.
Because I was having a really hard time trying to limit my... my interests and my aesthetic vision down to like one thing. And I asked her to come on board. She's been really helpful in that process. But up until recently, I've been really like adamant about making it about music. Like I want to make it about music. And as far as the like artistic vision and like showing my face and, like on album covers and stuff, I'm like into it, but I don't want to like sexualize myself too much or make it explicitly about like my physical appearance. But then I got this creative director on board who I love. She's amazing and she's so artistic. And she's been encouraging me to kind of like be more sexual in an empowering way and not in kind of like a cheapening the brand type of way. Which has been really, really fun. So, like, I've been wearing, like, a lot of, like, provocative things on stage recently that I don't have a problem with. I love wearing provocative stuff, but not sexually explicit, which has been really an interesting, fun thing to play with. So, I've been wearing, like, a lot of sheer stuff on stage or a lot of, like, form-fitting stuff on stage or been wearing, like, a lot of, like, black, like latex things. Playing with a lot more visual in my face and like seeing how that responds. It's been pretty fun. It's been fun to experiment. But yeah, I don't know. Before it was just, it's like all about the music for me, so I don't really think about that kind of stuff.
Right. I mean, and I almost expected that kind of a response because I think that there have been so many instances that we've seen where no matter how good the music an artist is putting out is, or bad for that matter, it becomes so much about the visuals that people focus exclusively on that, and what they might be trying to say musically is completely lost. Because when I saw a lot of the artwork from your albums and stuff, like it's not that I thought you were hideous or anything like that, but the person that I'm talking to right now, face to face with, doesn't match what the album. You know what I mean? Does like?
Yeah, that's cool. No, yeah. That's cool. I like it. That's cool. That's encouraging. Makes you feel good. But yeah, it's something actually that my creative director Claire's been addressing and kind of being like, people are animals, Grace. They want to see your face. They want to see your tits. They want to see your butt. And okay, and it's not sexually perverse. It's like a way to be fun and exciting and provocative. And it's like, it's interesting. I don't know.
Well, I mean, also, just the sheer dichotomy of the imagery. The imagery is often like really dark and like, you know, and here you're sitting with like this mane of curly, like reddish hair and fresh faced and like teenagey, and you know, it's like, it's very different. It's a very different experience. And I'm actually really glad that we're FaceTiming because like, I would have never, that would have never been triggered in my mind. The difference of, You know, because I would have been like, she's sitting in the hills brooding right now. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Black eyeliner and flat ironed hair or whatever, you know.
Yeah, book at 10 a.m.
She wakes up.
I don't know.
She wakes up punk rock. It's like, you know. Yeah. So talk to us about the new single, because I think it's a very poppy track. Like, yeah, it's very poppy.
Yeah. That I wrote with my friend Mark Johnson. And I think it was kind of influenced a lot by the sound, in particular, was influenced a lot by what he was listening to. He was listening to a lot of George Michael and, like, Rod Stewart at the time.
Okay.
And I was like, hell yeah, let's follow that train. Let's go down that route. And so we started playing with some drum machine and let's over exaggerate this like 80s pop ballad sound. And so we did. And the song is about me returning to my hometown for the person, like the kind of like younger person that I left behind in my small town. It's about me leaving my younger self in my small town and then returning back to it after living in, like, L.A. or New York.
Wow. Having heard that explanation gives me a new appreciation for the song, first of all. And it also, I think that, you know, as a gay man, for example, like, I wanted to leave my everything behind in my hometown. Like, that person, the way that people thought of me, the way I felt there. And then it wasn't until many years later, you know, for my 10-year high school reunion that I was able to return. I'm like, I'm coming back for that kid. You know, I'm coming back not for me as I am now. I'm coming back for who he was, because these people are going to see that they were wrong. They're going to see that the way that they treated somebody that was different was not okay. And they're going to see that I am thriving now. So I think that, like, having that kind of understanding makes me appreciate the song a lot more.
Yeah. What it's about. I mean, that's a beautiful story that you just shared. I love that idea. There's a lyric, that Drake has in one of his songs that goes, it's like one of my favorite lyrics of all time. And he goes, they're going to look back on how they treated me at my high school reunion, make everyone have to go through security clearance.
Mm.
And I'm obsessed with that. It makes me so happy. It's not what I want to do, but I'm like, oh, yeah, so many people feel exactly the same way. I want to make all their classmates go through security clearance when they go back to their high school reunion.
Well, you know, the funny, I mean, I could tell, I mean, this isn't about me, but there's great stories about from my 10-year reunion, because 10 years is just enough for people to, like, change and mature just enough that they're like, you know, it's internal in them that they've already done something. If they're a decent person at all, they're like, yeah, I really acted pretty shitty. You know what I mean? And so when somebody comes back and gives them every validation for how shitty they were, it's super good. Oh my God. It's so,
it's good. Yeah.
It's a great burn.
Yeah. I love seeing, this sounds really weird, but I love seeing girls from, like, my high school working at being, like, a barista that were, like, the coolest chicks ever. Like, they're like baristas now.
Yeah. I feel what you're saying. And I want to clarify that for the listeners. If you have an honest job, like, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with it. But if you have, like, but there are times when I walk into Starbucks to this day and, like, here in San Francisco, and some snotty, like, 19-year-old gives me an attitude, and I want to be like, sweetheart, you're pouring my coffee. Get over yourself. It's really what it's about. It's like, so at my high school reunion, there was, like, the most popular girl in school, like, had this clique of friends back then. And I changed dramatically. Like, I lost weight. I, like, you know, the whole full-on, like, TV-style transformation where the nerdy girl gets her makeover and then comes back and they find out that she's beautiful or whatever. And the big burn for me was there was this one girl, after she got drunk, was like, her husband came up and said, Kristen doesn't think that you're even who you say you are. She thinks that you were hired to come here in the place of, you know. And there was a whole group of people, and I just looked at him and said, your wife wasn't very smart in school, and I can see that some things don't change. I was like, you know what? You've got to be kidding me. But
amazing. Oh my God, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's so nice of you.
Yeah, that girl in particular had been made my life a living hell. She was the one who was like, from ninth grade, was like, every other day, like, are you gay? Are you gay? And I'm like, you don't even speak to me except to ask if I'm gay. Like, you know, do you have, like, what the hell is going on with you?
She really had a huge crush. She was, like, really bummed you were gay.
Probably. Maybe. So, speaking of which, everything that I've read about you describes you as a huge ally for the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, and I saw you.
And I was wondering how that sort of became part of who you are.
It's funny because there was no, like, a particular moment. Like, I, like, everyone should be an ally. I was talking to a friend about this last night where, so a lot of publications, a lot of people have been hitting me up about queerness and about gender binaries and about, like, modern feminism, especially about the LGBT community. And also kind of assuming when they're asking me to do these things that I'm gay. And it's really funny because I'm like, you know, I don't identify as gay. I don't really identify as any sexuality in particular. But what I've been thinking is really, really funny is that people are both surprised and they're like, I don't know the best way to phrase it, but a lot of people have been hitting me up being like, let's talk about you as an ally. And I've been like, wait, isn't it just like everyone should just be an ally? Like, is it really that surprising, or is really that, like, a talking point of mine that I'm an ally? Like, I feel like all my peers, for example, all of my friends in the music industry are allies. My friend Betty, who, her name is Bessa, she's, like, did a huge pride tour this last summer and went, like, all over the States, and she's been a huge ally. And that's another, like, she's straight, she has a boyfriend, and I don't know what I'm trying to say, but basically it's really interesting. Lately I've been hit up a lot to talk about my feminism and also LGBTQ community recent, and I feel bad because I'm not as educated as I wish that I was about, like, vocabulary, about LGBTQ history, about LGBTQ music, and culture, and, like, etiquette. I don't really know a lot, but I grew up in a family, thank God, that was, like, really, really supportive and really respectful and really compassionate to all different types of people, and, like, you know, everyone is equal, and, like, you should treat everyone with the same love that you treat your family. So I'm glad I grew up in that household, but I don't think it's something that's particularly unique about being treated. Like, it's very unique, which I think is funny because I think that it means that we're not as progressive as we think we are this generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, millennials and Gen X, like, I don't think that we're as progressive because it's, like, a unique thing if someone's, like, an ally.
Right.
A straight person, ally. It's interesting. I get it.
Yeah, I think that I do believe that as a member of the, like, the queer media, that we are evolving, because there was a time period when I did, and this is not that long ago, when I would do entire interviews based on somebody's status, basically, as an ally of the queer community, because it still was unique, and for it to be somebody to be in a position of status or power through celebrity or whatever that might be, to speak openly in support of LGBTQ rights and privilege, whatever. So now I think we are progressing to a point where that's not, you know, I rarely will contact somebody exclusively for that perspective.
Yeah.
I think that quite often, especially here in a recorded verbal format, like if we're writing, I always include a little bit of that because that sort of is the tie-in. But here, it's never the focal point. You know, when I'm on the podcast, it's never the focal point. But I do think that, for example, that it's wonderful that you and Betty Who are friends, because you're both very tall. Finally, two pop stars that are like, oh, hang with me. We feel like perfectly normal together. We don't
she's
stand
so,
out.
But she's, for example, really the queer community. Like, she grew up around it. She's been really embraced by the queer community, and like, and she's like got all the vocab down. I hang out with her and I learn new things all the time. I guess what I was trying to say is I was having a lot of thoughts happening at the same time, but I think that it's very, it's still unique for straight people to be a voice and advocate for the queer community, which I think is really fascinating, because it's actually a lot less than I thought it was. There's like a lot of the shit that I learn every single day where I'm like, huh, I grew up in a very specific liberal bubble, and it's not as good as I thought it was.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing I think that there might be a line of delineation here, because I love the fact, by the way, that like you've got it set under some plants, so every now and then like some leaves will come into our picture. It's very picturesque. But I think, for example, when it is most relevant, for example, that somebody is an ally, is because I think that many people actually aspire to or like adhere to the policy of what you talked about. Like everybody should, you know, about the acceptance and the openness. But I think when it becomes particularly meaningful is that when people speak out in ways that could impact their own status, for example, like that's the thing. Like when it's okay right now, especially because it seems popular or trendy to be an advocate. But when it's situations where it becomes like the going gets tough and somebody's like, well, you know, I don't care that this could impact my status. Like this is just what's right. I think that that's when it becomes truly meaningful to people, because we come from as a queer person, we come from a history of people who thankfully did that for us when we did not have the cachet that we do now, for example. Like I look at, you know, like historically, Madonna was outrageously outspoken. Liz Taylor, outrageously outspoken. You know, these people, and thankfully now it's not just women. It used to only be women, and now there are men who are like, you know what? No, right is right. And I think that is huge for us. It's a huge progression.
Yeah, it's really powerful. It makes me super emotional. I love hearing about allyship and how far it's come, short amount of time, but also not far enough. It's really interesting right now, where it's, I think that a lot of people on the West and East Coast think that it's come super far.
Mm-hmm.
And then go to somewhere in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And they'll get their whole mind blown off. It happened for me when I went on tour for the first time. I was like looking around, I was like, oh shit, this is not the West Coast anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't come before. So yeah, it's super good. It's really important to just say things that affect your own identity and ally. It's been a huge and like elating that I feel like I've been kind of like accepted or like initiated in. It really happened when I did the LGBTQ Center Women in Music thing at the Palladium this year. A lot of people came up to me and asked me to talk about being an ally. It was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you fall in the right in the age range. Like I have one niece and two nephews, and my niece is a couple years older than you, and my nephews are a couple years younger than you, and they are obviously very open and accepting, but what I've tried to educate them about is the fact that individual acceptance, levels of acceptance are wonderful, and we want people to individually accept us, but when it comes to a situation where you can raise your voice to make an impact on other people is when it becomes super important. And especially my nephews, I've tried to impress that on. You know what I mean? I'm like, you know, because I've explained to them, without necessarily going into that story I told you about earlier about the 10-year reunion, I said there were people that I went to school with who had, at that time, the same kind of status you do, because my oldest nephew is like very the jock, you know what I mean, that kid. And I said there were people like you who made my life terrible for a number of years. And if you, as your uncle, if I find out that you have people that are experiencing these around you, I would hope that you would speak up on their behalf, because that person is basically just who I was. And, you know, wouldn't you want me to have that protection? You know, so it's one of those things that I think that hopefully that level of acceptance with your generation going forward sets the new tone. You know what I mean? So that's super optimistic.
Yeah, it is. It's super optimistic. It's like, it's very idealist. I think it can And I think people like me and people like my peers and people on like on the West and East Coast are going to, you know, make strive to make it happen. But it's really, it's a bummer. It's a bummer, especially with our new dictator in charge and, you know. Whoa, didn't see that one coming. But yeah, it was been there all along, you know.
Absolutely. Now, it was funny to me that you mentioned Betty Who. Again, I'm going to just go, I'm fixated on the Betty Who thing for a second.
Go ahead. She's amazing.
Because we had her on the podcast, and after my interview, she said that I love interviews where I feel like I'd be friends with the interviewer. And I was like, I said, I always love interviews where I feel like I'd be friends with the interviewee. So that was a definite thing for us. But it's interesting to me because when I listen to your new single, there's a progression of notes or something about the very beginning of it. And I was like, oh my God, this reminds me of Betty Who's Heartbreak Dream. And I was like, which of course is my personal favorite Betty Who song. So I was like, oh, it was very, you got me off on the right foot with that one. So it's cool to know that you guys are friends.
Yeah, we're cool. Yeah, she's awesome. She's so fun. She always calls me mom. Does she do that thing? Mom or calls you dad?
No.
Oh my God, she's so funny. She hangs out with Super Fruit a lot.
Uh-huh.
What's the other one's name?
I don't. I know Super Fruit, but I don't know their individual names.
Yeah, they got. She hangs out with them a lot, and they're just like, "Oh my God, slay, mom, dad!" It's so fucking funny. I love it.
Yeah, they're like old, uber gay. So yeah. Super Fruits, indeed. So
it's all just like it's really good. They're like caricatures of themselves, and they make me laugh so hard. But that's the point too. It's not just that they're. Personality makes them laugh. They like always trying to make people laugh by being like super, super gay.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's my whole life. So.
Hey, by the way, did you go back to your high school reunion in drag?
I did not. So, no, I didn't. Because when I went to my first 10-year reunion, I wasn't doing drag yet.
Okay.
And then for my 20-year reunion, because I'm old, girl, I'm old. So for my 20-year reunion, I went home for the reunion and I did not go and drag, but I booked myself as like a headliner at the local gay club because in the time I've been gone, they opened a gay club in my hometown. And so they like all these people from my school that I had gone with and all my sisters, I have a younger sister, her friends, my mom's friends, like the entire gay club was there for me. Okay, so it's just a gay club in Ocala, Florida. It's not like I sold out Madison Square Garden or something. But still, you know, it was my personal return home. It was me. Yeah.
That is so fun. Oh, my God.
But the key thing for me at that, like, 10-year reunion was the fact that, okay, so I had lost a lot of weight. I had gotten rid of the thick glasses. I got rid of the bad hair. Like, you know, all those things that we don't really necessarily... Like, girl, you just got out of high school. So you know, might not be relating to it just yet. But, you know, like, all the things that I felt made me the person that they wanted to not like or whatever. I got rid of the physical parts of it. But I will tell you that the greatest change in me when I went back was that I did not give a fuck what those people thought anymore. And that was the biggest change. It's like, you know what? You can think any... After this moment, you still might think of me the same way you did before. And I don't care about you anymore. You have no power over me anymore. And that, to me, was like the greatest, like, reclaiming of that experience, you know?
It's fucking cool. It's really, really cool. I go back to visit some of my friends in Oregon during the summertime because I have one really, really close friend named Savannah who's like, I didn't have a lot of friends in high school at all. I had a lot of senior friends because they, like, at least sort of started to have a clue about the real world.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, kids in my grade, I had, like, no friends at all. And this one friend in particular, her name is Savannah, she's, like, so close to me. And every time I go back to Oregon, I feel the same way, just, like, zero fucks given to all the haters. Like, fuck off. I mean, I don't have the added pressure of, like, having been gay in high school, but, like, or any other, really. I've had a great high school experience, but, man, it is so fucking cool when you go back to your hometown and you're like, I do not relate to you people anymore. I don't need to impress anybody. It's super fun.
Yeah, I think in my experience, at least you were in areas of Oregon, which tend to be, like, more forward-thinking. You know, I was in a small town in the middle of it, like, we're best known for a national forest and horse racing. So you can kind of grasp it. Ocala, Florida. So, Ocala, yeah, exactly. You're like, so where are you from? And I'm like, I thought, you know, like, even when I tell you, you're like, where the hell is... You know, the thing was that thankfully, I'm so... One of the things that I gain when I go home to visit is that there is progress that's being made, even there. And it's been... Now it's been many, many years, like 25 years since I left that town. But the progress is still being made. It's slow, but I know that when I go home that the people who live there now have it better than I had it then. And there's something significantly pleasing about knowing that. You know what I mean? It's like, it's comforting because it would, the worst possible scenario would to be to go back there and it feel exactly the same. Yeah. Now, when exactly are you planning on releasing your album?
Coming out on August 17th.
Ooh.
And then I have a music video coming very soon for Cali God.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be single by single release so that I can feel like all of the songs that I worked really, really hard on to kind of perfect the sonic vision will all have the audience that they deserve.
Their moment.
I really think that this is the best way for that to happen. It's kind of not as satisfying releasing like a not releasing like a full body of work, but it's just not the way that people consume music nowadays. So it's like you gotta rest with the time and the technology, or else you're gonna get left behind.
Yeah, I mean, unless I really do believe that unless you are like a huge name star, putting out an entire album is it just doesn't. Because there's no obligation to purchase it. You know what I mean? That like there's songs that each song you've worked on really hard, you've poured your heart into it. If people aren't going to even bother with it, then you're doing a disservice to the song and yourself.
Yes. It's like throwing it away.
Now, how can people follow you on social media? I know it's just Grace Mitchell on Twitter.
Yeah, it's like Grace Mitchell. Grace Mitchell, Instagram, Facebook, Grace Mitchell.
So.
Twitter. Yeah.
I've, like, despite the fact that it took us 800 tries, this ending up FaceTiming together is so much better, I think. Like, I really feel like I got a much better feel for who you are. Even, like, you guys, you can't see it, but every now and then she'll, like, roll her eyes, and at one point she, like, flipped her hair. She was like, it was great. I lived for it.
Thanks, yeah. So. It's funny. I don't do this normally. I also feel like if we had, like, a phoner, it'd probably only be, like, 15 minutes, so... This is cool.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. So.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for talking today, Grace. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
What are you going to do today?
Oh, my God. I am, like, I've got this interview with you, and then I've got another interview not that long from now. Like, let's hope that, I mean, I like both songs equally well, like yours and hers, but let's hope that she and I have a connection like you and I did. I feel like. So.
You don't.
So, and then, I'm going to go, I'm obsessed with pro wrestling, so.
Oh my God, funny. I love that.
So, yeah, like, you know, I think the line between pro wrestling and drag is so practically non-existent, yeah.
No, it's like, I went to a pro wrestling thing in Brooklyn. My friends are really, really into it. It is so homoerotic.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, this is amazing. This is like being at Pride.
Yeah. I love it. And well, I mean, think, you know, I wrote this piece on Huffington Post a while ago where I was like, I grew up in that town in Florida, like wanting to be a professional wrestler. And then I was like, God, like they're not going to be nice to me. You know what I mean? Like, because of who I am. So I'll just go get my own feathered, glittered robe and bleach blonde hair and do it my own way. Damn it.
Yeah. And like oil up my whole body.
Yeah.
Get jacked. It's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. And people wonder why, like, there's a significant number of professional wrestlers who are gay. I'm like, hello, do you realize that this is all about vanity, first and foremost? Like, so, Yeah. And so I'm going to a professional wrestling event tonight, and it's going to be fun. And then tomorrow I do my drag show.
Wow. Fun.
So I thought it was adorable that you asked which pronoun I prefer. And I was like, she's not going to be referring to me in third person anyway. I was like,
but yeah, I thought about that. And then I was like, if it ever happens, sometimes I'll have phone interviews with people. I can't distinguish what gender their voice.
Yeah.
I
never even try to disguise my voice. Even when I'm in full drag, I'm like, this is what I sound like. You know, I'm not, nope, not trying it. And, I don't ever pretend to be female. I mean, the character is female, but I'm not, you know, it's like, and I tell people, this is about fun and entertainment. This isn't about, it's about expression, but it's not about expressing my gender identity. This is,
Totally. Well, that's the thing too, though, is like a lot of gay men who prefer male pronouns and who also identify heavily with being male will do drag, but then there are a lot of transgender women who also do drag, so it's like, I never told you this, but my writing mentor is gay.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he has a gender-neutral kid and lives in Portland, and I learned a lot about the queer community from him and writing with him. And, even though I did grow up in a really progressive town, a lot of the time, the gay community that I was being introduced to were like heavily feminized men.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, all gay men are really feminine. Like, not, no.
Right.
So false. And, yeah, so I'm just, like, learning more and more, and then so many men who do drag are, like, super masculine in their gay identity, so it's, like, learn new things all the time, super ignorant.
I think that for myself, like, well, first of all, like, this is an educational piece that came to me late in life as well, and it talks to what you talk about in terms of like transgender women who do drag versus men who do drag. And it's drag is what you do. Trans is who you are. Drag means that anybody of any gender or no genders at all can do it. It's about dressing up and transformation and being fabulous. And then the transgender portion or trans element is about gender identity and who they feel like they are. And for me, drag is definitely what I do, but it's certainly not who I am. I mean, it is who I am, but it's not, if you understand what I mean. Like,
of course, it's a character.
Yeah, it's like, it's totally who I am.
I go on stage, it's the same.
Right.
Same yeah.
And that's why when you were saying that you've got this new stylist who's suggesting you try all these new looks and things, I'm like, oh, she's got you doing drag. She's like, you know, she's putting you in drag out there in a variation of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Grace Mitchell, the performer, is way different than, like, FaceTime Grace Mitchell.
Yeah. So, I can't wait to see what comes for you.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited too. I'm really excited right now because I'm going to be going on tour in like 5 days. And I have this new creative director who's helping me make the vision all-encompassing. So, it's going to be fun.
Yay.
Well, yeah.
Thank you for talking. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me talk to you. I like it.
Yay. Yep. So, thanks. And I'm going to keep my like finger on the pulse of what you're doing so that we can make sure all of our listeners stay up to date on that. And so I can personally like hit you up if we have the opportunity to speak about something fun and new in the future.
Super fun. Yeah. Follow me on IG.
Yay.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Bye.
Have a fun night.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye. Oh my God, you guys, that was much longer than expected, but Grace Mitchell is not only wildly talented as a musician, but she's a gorgeous individual, and you could clearly pick up on her beautiful spirit. Go check her out at Grace Mitchell on all social media platforms. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poya Del Mar, and I will be back with more right after this.
Hey, this is Delta Work, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, brought to you by Left Magazine.
Hey y'all, this is Bob the Drag Queen. You are listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo Del Mar and Pearl. Listen up, girl.
All right, everybody, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We just heard from singer Grace Mitchell. If you are in the San Francisco Bay Area, you have an opportunity to see Grace Mitchell live at the Outside Lands Festival that's coming to San Francisco Bay Area. August 11th through 13th, the lineup is insane, you guys. In addition to Grace Mitchell, they're going to be having acts like Lorde, A Tribe Called Quest, Metallica, Solange,
girl.
I mean, the Kay Flay, who we've had here on the podcast before, the lineup is insane. So information can be found out. Just Google Outside Lands Concert. It's, as I said, August 11th through 13th. Grace Mitchell plays on the 11th. Tove Lo's going to be there. Like, yeah. I mean, it's going to be a great concert lineup. So get your ticket information, get your tickets and information now. Just Google Outside Lands San Francisco. You'll get all of that details. And if you want more information about Grace Mitchell, go to her website at gracemitchellmusic.com. Oh, we are rapidly coming to the close of yet another episode, you guys.
It was fabulous.
Oh, my God.
Started off kind of rough.
Girl, Pearl loves any episode where we have pre-recorded interviews.
I do, girl.
Yeah, you know she does, bitch. She's like, ooh, girl, I'm in and out of here in no time. So, and she showed up hella early today to record, so she's out of here.
I'm like, girl, let's do this.
Yeah, we're wrapping up about the time that we're usually barely getting hitting the halfway point. It's only 6:15, bitch.
That's sickening.
Yeah, it's like we record on Tuesday. You guys hear this on Wednesday. So we're already wrapping up. It's now is usually this time in the recording session is about the time we usually take our first call-in interview from, like, yeah. If we're going to have a guest, we always schedule them at 6:15 p.m.
Yeah, I'm living.
So, you guys, I want you to know that we've got more fantastic interviews forthcoming. We are lining them up fast and furious, boo. So you can always tune into Party Foul Radio for all of your most up-to-date information on what's happening in pop culture and entertainment, especially with our focus on the LGBT community. We love to bring you all that. Educate, entertain, and inform. That's our motto around here.
You know, so don't forget to check our sponsors out who help bring this podcast to you.
That is very true. Go on over to 4102 19th Street at Castro and go visit Daddy's Barbershop. Get your hair did for the summer, honey. Tell Arlen, Jesse, and the men and women at Daddy's Barbershop that we sent you. And remember, Daddy's Barbershop was voted San Francisco's best barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Thank you for being sponsors of Party Foul Radio.
Right. Don't forget to check out Left Magazine over at liveleft.com. And if you live in the city, go ahead and pick up your mag somewhere out here locally, girl. They're everywhere.
Yes, they are. And this issue of Left Magazine that's on the newsstands right now is all about drag kings.
Come on, drag kings.
Drag kings on the cover, boo.
I live.
So that's liveleft.com. Of course, if you are checking out what is going on in the LGBTQ world outside of San Francisco.
And out in Australia.
Especially with emphasis on down under and travel around the world, go down and check out GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is Australia's premier LGBTQ news, travel, and entertainment website. GuideToGay.com is a sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
Don't forget, if you need any kind of lubricants for any orifice,
all your holes, boo,
go check out Swiss Navy Lubricants. They've got everything you need and more.
You know they do. And if you are looking for a fierce makeup primer, all you drag queens out there, use your Swiss Navy Premium Silicone Lubricant. Just
Are
a little
serious?
Bit of it. Yes, girl. All those high-end makeup primers are silicone-based. Like, if you get a MAC.
So, you're telling me they're just walking out here with lube on their face?
Kind of, a little bit. It's the same thing. It's just.
Okay, well, y'all try that out. Let me know how it goes, and maybe I'll try it after
bitch,
you.
Bitch, I do it all the time. Swiss Navy is for all your holes, bitch. And a pore is a hole, honey. It'll cover it, and your makeup will go on smooth, I promise you. Don't overdo it, bitch, but just a little bit goes a long way.
Oh
my
God.
If you got a wig that's all hella nappy, use a little bit of Swiss Navy Premium Lubricant in that,
so
too.
Stupid.
Just
no.
A little bit of it on your brush, and just whoop. Girl, the tangle just comes right out,
girl,
bitch.
Check out Swiss Navy Lubricant.
It's true. Swiss Navy Lube is for more than just your sphincter, bitch. It can fix your wig. It can fix your face. Thank you, Ellen Friedman and Swiss Navy Premium Lubricants for being a sponsor of Party Foul Radio,
everything.
Honey. Girl. Pearl's over here like, no, girl. No, not the wig. Oh, no. Not the makeup.
Right. Not the face, girl.
Yes, bitch. I do it all the time. A little bit. the thing with silicone-based primers is that they go on. What happens is they'll go on your face, and because of the fact that it's so smooth, it'll smooth into wrinkles and pores, and it provides, like, a little bit of a base so it doesn't allow your makeup to, like, you know, sometimes, like, makeup has got oil in it, and so sometimes your face will just sort of suck it all up. This allows it to, like, go on smooth and blend very easily, and then when you powder it, it sets it, and it's lovely.
All right, girls, so if you try that, go ahead and tweet us at Party Foul Radio, or send us a comment over at on Facebook at Party Foul Radio.
I'm telling you, bitch, it
works.
And let
us know how it goes. Don't forget to like us and subscribe. Well, you can subscribe to Podomatic if you're on
yes,
Podomatic.
Yes, you definitely yeah. subscribe to us on Podomatic. You will never miss an episode of Party Foul Radio. As soon as we post it, if you have subscribed to us on Podomatic, it will notify you, girl, and you'll be the first to hear our new episode.
Yes, because you know we're number one.
So we are number one in LGBTQ. Go, and because of you, all of you, thank you for listening. And again, I would really love, well, you know what? I would love to hear from our listeners in and around Africa and all these like really oppressed countries, but presumably they probably are afraid to tweet us or whatever. You know what I mean?
I
sure would be too. So if you are listening to us in one of these places, and if we are able to bring you just a little bit of joy and happiness, or
feel free to send us a private message too.
Yes. But just thank you for listening. And it makes me, especially after this event that I did with Sister Roma yesterday, listening to these speakers and people who help immigrants get out of these places, it brought me special joy thinking that we might be just a little bit of hope for these people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's really wonderful. So with that, you guys, I think we are out of here until next week.
That's it.
That's it. I'm Poet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
We'll see you then.
Bye. It's over. It's over. She's the one.